listen to, so I try to get out as often as I can.
So the Innistocin people have taken matters into their own hand and are protecting their land through living off of the land. You've created a cultural center, a pit house. You pick berries, you hunt, you fish. You're living there. It's your home.
Yes.
And that's how you do it. And if people are interested in standing in solidarity, then you can get a hold of Zoe Blunt, and she's with an organization.
And also, we have a Facebook page and a website, too, that they can reach us through there as well.
And this is peaceful. There are no arms there. Nobody's got any guns.
It's peaceful.
It's peaceful and respectful and very, very a good group of people to stand in solidarity with. I'm thinking seriously of coming there myself and standing with your people.
We've actually got a spring camp that's happening right now, and there's 50 people from all over down there. There's people from California. There's people from Germany
that
have come and show their support because they're opposed to the pipelines as well, and they're helping build the pit house, the bunk house, and the permaculture garden, and next week is the last week that construction camp is going.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for calling us and sharing this information with the people of CITR. I'd like to dedicate this next song to you and the other Unistoten people and others who are standing in solidarity with you. It's by Chief Rock, and it says, "Yes, we're ready for you." Here it is.
I got my head up in the game, mind sharp on point, harder than a flame, harder than the rocks, grandfathers in my sweat. Medicine, breathe it in deep, never let us forget. Ignorance is never bliss. Clear my mind, feel the heat, renew my spirit for this evolution, revolution. Scramble for that solution, liquefy, bless the waters, giving life. I'll give this life for that next generation coming. Chanting my ancestor's song while I'm drumming. Shooting elders and women, that's so damn numbing. So war erupts, stand your ground, take it back. No retreat, even in the face of the heat. Mother Earth beneath my feet reminds me why my people will never meet defeat. So keep our circle strong, so we can feel complete. I'm where I belong. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are idle no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
And I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Yeah, I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are idle no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for your Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
Deep down in my heart, I know it's just a start. And old Canada, the corporation is racing to eradicate those terrorists, the menace to society, trying to protect the waters and the land as the corporate propaganda tries to expand those pipeline deals. Another case of a criminal with a tie. Who could care less if my whole family dies? Pools of black oil running through the streets. RCMP running loose on the people like a ravaged month. It's quite clear who they're here to serve and protect. A mindless, heartless, inhumane monster with a license to kill at will. All for a paycheck. Yo, you best check yourself before you wreck yourself. So stand up. All my warriors come together. Let's unite. They wanna push us to our limits. Let's bring them the fight of their life. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are idle no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
And I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Yeah, I do it for all my realest natives in the game.
It means it's time to sever the tie. Even if we gotta die, time to try. Separate from this corporation called O'Canada. Wake up, it's never been a nation. Your brain's been on a long vacation. A deep sleep from this English magic grammar. Spells, oil spills, oil kills. Tear down those oil drills. No matter what color or creed, money always equals greed. What wreck a planet for a profit? Come on, stop it. Once this planet is dead, where we gonna go? What we gonna eat, gonna drink? What you think that 1% was gonna bring you in their ship when they left you to die? And a shout out to all the sellouts, we still got love for ya. Even if you took a no to the queen, to be a band member, son, if you know what I mean, huh? Now you know why we fight, we fight for this planet.
Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are idle no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
And I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Yeah, I do it for all my realest natives in the game. Got the RCMP ready for war against all my people who are idle no more. Blocking roads, stopping trains on our land. We walk with no fear, no gun in our hands. Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, fight for this planet.
Yeah, we ready for war.
Fighting for Mother Earth.
Yeah, we ready for ya.
Yeah, we're never backing down.
Good afternoon. You're on CITR Radio with Marco, and this is AstroTalk, your weekly astronomy talk show. The past few weeks, I talked about Death Stars and something called a magnetar with intense magnetic field. If it was close to the Earth, the magnetic field would kill us. And there are starquakes on these magnetars. So magnetars are neutron stars. After a supernova, a neutron star can form if the remaining core has a certain mass range between 1.4 to 4 solar masses. So after the supernova explosion, what's left of the core, it could form a neutron star. If what's left of the core is over 4 solar masses, then it will form a black hole. So we all know black holes, I guess even little children in elementary school know about black holes. So today we're going to talk about something totally different. We're talking about, I guess, our inspiration is the forest moon of Endor from Star Wars, where the Ewoks helped the Luke Skywalker defeat the evil empire. So we're going to talk about moons today, but not really moons, exomoons. So an exomoon is a moon that's located outside of our solar system. So an exomoon would orbit an exoplanet. So an exoplanet is a planet that orbits a star other than our own sun. So somewhere many light years away, there's lots of exoplanets that have been discovered. And they've discovered their first exomoon. So today we're not going to talk about exomoons. We're going to talk about moons of our solar system. This could be a two-part show because there's lots of moons. Jupiter has about 67 moons and maybe more. So there's lots of moons to talk about. So today, I guess, we're going to start in the inner solar system, which are the terrestrial planets which have solid surfaces. And then later we're going to talk about the moons that orbit the gas giants, like Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. So first, let's talk about Mercury. There's no moon on Mercury, and there's no moon on Venus. So we're going to go past our Earth and talk about the moons of Mars. So Mars has two moons called Phobos and Deimos. They look like two typical asteroids, and they were captured by Mars many millions of years ago when Mars had an atmosphere. So the atmosphere of Mars slowed down these asteroids and caught them in Mars orbit. So these are captured asteroids, very much smaller than our moon. It's not easy for a planet to capture a moon, but that's what Jupiter's done, because Jupiter is a giant planet with a lot of gravity, so it's captured a lot of asteroids that now rotate around Jupiter as moons. So it was not easy for a planet to capture a moon. The object must be slowed down enough, which happened in Mars. The Martian atmosphere slowed down two asteroids and it captured them. So Phobos is the one that's closer in, and Deimos is farther out. So they're very close. Phobos, it's so close that it rises and sets twice a day. And Deimos rises and sets once a day. So these were captured because they lost orbital energy or momentum from the atmosphere that Mars used to have. And it's a kind of random nature of capture. I guess a lot of asteroids have passed by planets, so very few are captured. So now we're going to talk about Phobos. Phobos orbits in a circular motion in the equatorial plane of Mars. So it's in the equator of Mars. Phobos and Deimos were discovered in 1877 by someone called Asaph Holt. Phobos is a shorter distance from Mars, about 9,400 kilometers, and it's well inside the synchronous orbit of Mars, so it rises in the west and sets twice in the east, twice a day. And Phobos is slowed down by the gravity of Mars. These are called tidal forces. So Phobos is spiraling inwards towards Mars. Astronomers believe in about 40 million years it will crash into the Martian surface. So if humans are around, we will see that, but who knows. And Deimos orbits farther out, and astronauts believe its orbit is increasing over time, so it will eventually shoot out from the orbit and not be a moon of Mars anymore. So in some odd millions of years, Mars will not have any moons. The moons of Mars, Phobos and Deimos, are very small in comparison to the moon and the Earth. So the moon and the Earth are sometimes considered a two-planet system. The moon orbits pretty close to 400,000 kilometers away from Earth, where Phobos is about less than 10,000, and Deimos is about less than 25,000. So they're very, very close in comparison to our moon. So they are very small. They influence Mars in no way at all. Not like how the Earth and the Moon influence each other. So now let's look at our closest neighbor, the Moon. The Earth-Moon ratio, it's about a 4-to-1 mass ratio. So in a way, astronomers consider the Earth and the Moon a double planet system. And the moon has phases, which is the new, the first quarter, the full, and the last quarter. And they are linked between the angle of direction of the moon and the Earth, and this cycle repeats every 29 and a half days about. The moon always shows the same face to the Earth, and there's no dark side of the moon. That's just a myth. It's just that we always see the same size. So the moon's rotational period and orbital period are tidally locked to the Earth at 27.3 days. The moon is the only object other than the Earth in our solar system that human beings have landed on. So it's we know a lot about the moon. We don't know a lot about other moons or other planets of the solar system. So from the Apollo landings, or just wait, the first space flight was in 1957, Sputnik, and the Soviets sent the first lunar probe to the moon in 2 years after, in 1959. And Luna 3, the first lunar flyby, was the first time that we had a look at the far side of the moon. The far side is covered by highlands, unlike the other side that we see with a lot of craters. the Apollo missions to the moon took back a lot of samples, and the samples they took from the radioactive decay, astronomers believe that the moon formed about 4.5 billion years ago, same time as the Earth. So the core and the mantle separated about 200 million years after it's formed, and about 500 million years after the moon formed, there was a lot of asteroids hitting both the moon and the Earth. So this was about 0.5 billion years or after the moon formed. So there's lots of giant impact craters, and the moon's surface is pockmarked by lots of overlapping craters. There are mountains on the moon, and scientists believe these are formed from the rebound of the crust when the meteors hit the moon. And there's also heat from the radioactive decay in the core of the moon. So some of the heat from this escapes through the crack, the fissures or fractures in the crust of the moon. And scientists have discovered that minerals on the moon and the Earth are quite similar. So the theory was that they came up in the 1980s that a Mars-sized object hit Earth, giant collision, and the debris that was thrown up, it orbited around the Earth, and it coalesced into the moon. So there was also research done in the 80s that show how the perturbations of planets or asteroids or rocks, so they were, their orbits were disturbed from the orbits of Saturn and Jupiter early on in the formation of the solar system. So scientists believe is that's how this Mars-sized object was thrown into the Earth, because of the gravitational forces of Saturn and Jupiter. It disrupted some of the orbits of the early planets or planetesimals, so that's how the Mars-sized object crashed into the Earth. So this Mars-sized planet was called a jaywalking planet, and it produced a giant collision with the Earth. Scientists believe that this Mars-sized planet, which impacted Earth, collided, it was an off-center impact, and it caused ejection of the crust of the Earth. So the debris that was thrown up into the atmosphere or up into space, the rotating debris formed into the moon. Now the moon is very important for the Earth. Unlike Deimos and Phobos, which have no effect on Mars, the Earth has, or the moon has, a tremendous effect on the Earth. So scientists believe that if we did not have a moon, our axis would tilt as much as 60%. So that means in the winter, the North Pole would be in the north, and in the summer, the North Pole would tilt so much that would be around the equator. So all the ice would melt and life would be impossible on our Earth. Earlier on in the formation of the moon, it was closer to the Earth. So the length of day on the Earth could have been a few hours or 8 hours. The Earth spun around very fast, so the tides were very, very high, up to 1,000 feet. So life could not have been possible early on in the solar, early on in the birth of the Earth, in the early years of the Earth. So Earth, as Earth rotates, it transfers some rotational energy to the moon, and it pushes the moon away an inch or two every year. So the moon is slowly moving away from the Earth. So now we have a 24-hour day. Later on, could be 50,000 years from now, scientists believe that we will have a 48-hour day. So the Earth will spin slower, but our axis will tilt more, so our seasons will be real drastic changes, unlike today. So there's another feature of the Earth-Moon system. It has to do with the rotation of the Moon around the Earth. So there's a center of gravity between the Moon and the Earth, and this is called the barycenter. So the center of mass of the Earth-Moon system is located inside the Earth, and this is where the barycenter, the Moon rotates around the barycenter, and so does the Earth. In our solar system, there's also a barycenter for all the planets in the Sun. So the barycenter's inside the Sun, and the Sun rotates around the barycenter, as do the planets. So that's an interesting thing about the Earth-Moon system, the location of the barycenter. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR. We will now pause for a break.
Either you've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue, right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
Here's how he feels, but blues ain't nothing but a man. Good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
Welcome back. You're listening to AstroTalk with Marco on CITR. We were talking about the moons of Mars and the Earth. So Mars has two moons, Phobos and Deimos, and they are captured asteroids, much, much smaller than our moon, and they have no effect at all on Mars. Phobos will, in about 40 million years, it is rotating so close to the to Mars that Mars's gravity will pull it in. It will crash on the surface of the moon. And the other moon of Mars, Deimos, its orbit is increasing. Just like our moon, it's being pushed out by the Earth each year, little bit by little bit. So astronomers believe that one day it will just be ejected and Mars will have no more moon. Our moon on Earth is moving a bit farther and farther away each year, about an inch or two, and in about 50,000 years or longer than that, this will affect how fast the Earth spins. The days will become longer. Earth's tilt will become greater. Our axis, so the seasons will change drastically. By the way, astronomers believe in the early years of our moon-Earth system, when the moon was very close to the Earth, the tides were very high. They believed tides could have been 1,000 feet high. So this could have had a cause in mixing, a role in mixing up all the elements that created the life on Earth. So material from the bottom of the ocean was brought onto the surface, and this could have created the seeds for life on our Earth. So now we have a 24-hour day. As time goes on, the moon is moving farther away from the Earth, and eventually there'll be a 48-hour day on Earth, and the moon will have less pull on the Earth, so the tides won't be as high, but our axis, our tilt would get higher, and it could be in the future where the North Pole will be in its place where it is in the winter. And in the summer, because of the moon does not have the stabilizing effect on the Earth, when it moves away farther and farther from the Earth, the North Pole could shift, the Earth could tilt as much as making the North Pole move to the equator and then back again in the winter. So this will have a drastic effect on life on Earth. So it's very important that we as a species look outside of Earth and start colonizing these places called Moon and Mars. So now we're going to look at Jupiter's moons. So scientists officially categorized Jupiter as having 67 moons. Jupiter has the largest moon in the solar system, and it also has the hottest place in the solar system outside of the sun, which is its moon Io, because Io has giant volcanoes and lava flows. So Jupiter was named after Jove, the Roman equivalent to Zeus. Galileo was the first person to spot Jupiter in a telescope in 16... Oh, let me see. Where is this? I think it's 1612. So he saw four moons. He studied four objects rotating around Jupiter, and these were eventually would be called the Galilean satellites. So they are Io, Ganymede, Europa, and Callisto. So in the 17th century, the Earth was thought to be at the center of the universe. This was the Aristotelian system. But Copernicus, he proposed a new system where the Earth and the other planets orbit the sun. So Galileo observations placed doubt on Aristotle's theories that Earth was the center of the universe. But to say this was heresy in the 17th century. So Galileo was brought down to the basement of the Vatican and shown the various torture systems or the various tortures that would be inflicted upon him if he didn't recant his ideas. So he did recant his ideas publicly, but he was still sentenced to life imprisonment in 1633. And Galileo died in 1642. So for many hundreds of years, the church kept the Aristotelian system, where the Earth was at the center, as alive. On October 31st, 1992, Pope John Paul offered a type of apology to Galileo, not a full apology. But anyway, what Galileo discovered 400 years ago was that Earth and the other planets orbit the sun. So now we're going to talk about the four major moons of Jupiter. So they are Io, Ganymede, Europa, and Callisto. So Ganymede is the king of the solar system, the king moon. It is the largest moon of the solar system. Saturn has the second biggest moon, which is called Titan. So now we're going to look at the effects of the moons Io, Ganymede, and Europa, what effects they have on Jupiter itself. So these three large moons blast Jupiter with particles streams, and they spark magnetic footprints and auroras on Jupiter. So these moons, Jupiter influences its moons, but its moons also influence Jupiter. These three moons, Io, Ganymede, and Europa, are thought to have a type of flux tube that connects these three moons, the poles of Io, Ganymede, and Europa, electrically to the poles of Jupiter. So that's a very interesting phenomenon. This doesn't happen on our moon. So now we're going to look at the innermost moon of Io. It's important, before looking at Io, to discuss something about the three moons, Io, Ganymede, and Europa. Ganymede completes one orbit in the same time that Europa completes two orbits. And while this happens, Io completes four orbits. So it's a pattern. It's called orbital residence, where the orbits of all these three moons, Ganymede, Europa, and Io, are influenced not only by Jupiter, but by the fact that there's this orbital resonance. So these tend to make the orbits of Ganymede, Europa, and Io elliptical, which is very strange for moons because our moon is in a circular orbit as are most other moons. So now we're going to talk about Io and what effect this orbital resonance has on Io. So Io is the innermost moon of the four large moons of Jupiter. So Io's about the same size as our moon, but it's quite different. The gravitational tides of Jupiter work to flex Io's crust. It's like a paperclip. If you flex it up back and forth, it's going to heat up. So this is what happens to Io from the tidal forces of Jupiter and from the tidal forces of the other moon. This fluxes the crust of Io. So this heats the interior of Io. So there is endless volcanic activity on Io. So Io is the hottest place in the solar system that's outside of the sun. Scientists have spotted seas of lava and giant volcanoes erupting on Io's surface. And this is, this is quite strange because Io is so far from the sun. So you have to wonder what is causing the heat inside Io to cause this volcanic activity. The Galileo spacecraft, which recently visited the moons of Jupiter, saw that Io had a sulfurous yellow surface and its landscape was dominated by lava flows and seas of lava. Pictures were taken from the Galileo spacecraft showing eruptions about 100 miles into the air, which is phenomenal. That doesn't happen on Earth. So Io's crust has been turned inside out by the gravitational tides from Jupiter and from the moons Ganymede, Europa, and planet Jupiter. So the atmosphere of Io is surrounded by immense clouds of ions and neutral atoms, and this is due to the great lava flows from the volcanic eruptions on Io's surface. So of Voyager 1, a spacecraft that is now on the outer reaches of our solar system, it was launched in 1977. It flew by Io in 1979, and it noted the eruptions, the high temperatures, which are the highest in the solar system. So Io's core is fluxed, and it renews itself, or flexed, from the gravitational tide of Jupiter and the other moons. So there are no signs of impact craters on Io because the crust is constantly renewed and lava flows and covers these. And astronomers believe Io also has tectonic activity, which means earthquakes. So there's volcanism and tectonic activity usually go hand in hand. So there's gases released in the air from the explosion or from the volcanic explosions, and these are fed partly into Jupiter's magnetosphere. So there's a torus of gas that surrounds Io, and this is from the volcanic explosion and and the volcanic explosions also contributed to Jupiter's magnetosphere. But much of the gas on Io that erupts from the volcanoes falls back to its surface. So its surface is red and orange from the sulfur and a white frost color from the SO2 gases. So the hot lava on Io's surface revaporizes these gases, much like if a volcano on Hawaii erupts, the lava flows to the ocean and it vaporizes this gas. So scientists believe that with this, it's the same process where lava flows into the oceans on Earth and Io, the lava flows into the gases that are on Io's surface. So Io is quite hot inside, which is very strange because it's so far from the sun. So this is due to the tidal heating from Jupiter and from two other moons. So there's orbital resonance, where when Ganymede orbits once, Europa orbits twice, and Io orbits four times. So when these orbits line up, these moons influence each other and create an elliptical orbit. So the orbits line up and this stretches out the orbits. This is called orbital resonance. And so that's all on Io. So now we're going to look at the world of Europa. It's a world because even though it's a moon, it's a water world. There's more water on the moon of Europa than there is on Earth, or so astronomers believe. So there are no volcanoes on Europa, even though it's influenced by the tidal force of Jupiter and Jupiter's other moons. Europa has a fractured frozen surface, and there is only a handful of impact craters, probably tens of million years old. This is because water somehow seeps up and either freezes or just flows into these craters. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR. This is Marco. We're going to pause for a break.
The May issue of Discorder is here. This month's cover features local garage rocker Skinny Kids, plus articles on the ASL Singles Club, Fistful of Snacks, Kiss Painting, Wildkind, and so much more. We are also proud to announce Homegrown Labels, a new column dedicated to celebrating record labels in our own city. So pick up a copy of Discorder around town, or check us out online at discorder.ca, and listen to a curated playlist featuring the May issue's artists. And a special thanks to this issue's advertisers, AEG Live, LiveVan.com, Moto the Car Co-op, North by Northeast Festival, the Rickshaw Theater, Sled Island Festival, UBC Alumni Weekend, and Vinyl Records.
Welcome back. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR. This is Marco. So now we're going to finish off with the last giant moons, the Galilean moons of Jupiter. There is heating in the center of Europa. It has a metallic core and a rocky mantle, but there's speculation that this heating is due to gravitational decay of the elements. Not as much as Io, where there's a lot of the heating inside the planet is due to the tidal forces of Jupiter and the other moons. So again, there's speculation that Europa's ocean contains more water than Earth. The Galileo spacecraft in 2005 also detected a magnetic field around the moon Io. Europa. So Europa would have to have a liquid layer of electric charge conducting material for this magnetic field to exist. So just like in the Earth, below the surface there's hot lava that circulates, so these are the currents that produce our magnetic field on Earth. Scientists believe that the water, which is electrically conducting material, would have to exist for Europa to have a magnetic field. So our moon does not have a magnetic field, so it's quite strange for moons to have magnetic fields. So there's strong case for deep ocean and also lava eruptions on the ocean floor of Europa. And with lava eruptions on the ocean floors, like on Earth's ocean floors, scientists believe that these vents on our seabed, they found life in these vents. So is there more life on Europa? Well, that we'll have to wait for more research. Now we're going to move on to the king of the moons. It's called Ganymede. It's the largest moon in the solar system, has a surface of water ice. Some of the surface is dark and densely cratered, so it looked like it did billions of years ago. But some of the surface of Ganymede is colored with, lightly colored and with craters, so there's some liquid water that has covered some of these craters, but not like the other part where it's dark and densely cratered, so scientists aren't sure why part of Ganymede's surface is cratered and the other part is not. So, but they've had with the Galileo flybys, they've noted that water flows through cracks in the surface of Ganymede. So there's a question, does Ganymede have deep oceans? There's been magnetic field measurements of Ganymede's planet or moon from the Galileo spacecraft, so scientists are not sure. So Ganymede does have a varying magnetic field, but this also is influenced by its proximity to the planet Jupiter. So when it's closer, the magnetic field is higher. But since there's a magnetic field, this suggests the presence of salty oceans beneath the surface of Ganymede. And Ganymede is farther from Jupiter than Europa or Io, so its tidal heating is not as prominent. But since Ganymede is big, some of the tidal heating is probably due to the radioactive decay. But if there is an ocean on Ganymede, scientists believe it's below 150 kilometers of a thick crust of ice. Now we're going to look at the last moon in our tour of Jupiter's moon. This is called Callisto. Callisto was one of the four moons discovered by Galileo. It's the outermost Galilean moon, but it doesn't participate in this orbital resonance where the other moons, Io, Ganymede, and Europa, they orbit in a pattern which influences where their orbits, when they line up, they influence each other, so it stretches out the orbits, and they orbit in a elliptical orbit, which Callisto doesn't. So Callisto is a heavily cratered ice ball, and this is what astronomers would expect from an outer satellite of the solar system, because it's so far from the sun. There's large craters and Io's. They're bright circular patches. These are impact craters from meteor or comet impacts. Scientists believe that these craters are bright because clean ice from below the surface was blasted out with these impact craters. So that's why they reflect sunlight better. So that's why Callisto's craters are bright and circular. But there's also dark powdery substance concentrated on the low-lying areas of Callisto. So this leaves ridges and crest. Callisto is the third largest moon in the solar system, but it lacks the volcanism and tectonics of Io. Scientists believe its interior has never heated significantly, but there's no source of internal heating. So Callisto has no tidal heating from Jupiter. It's farther out from Jupiter, and its orbit doesn't align itself with other moons of Jupiter, so there's no orbital resonances. And Callisto's interior, scientists believe there's not much radioactive activity as well. But Callisto may hide a subsurface ocean. So these are things that NASA wants to explore in the future. There's many surprises when these spacecraft are sent and they see lava flows and eruptions and they measure magnetic fields. So now that scientists know this, they can plan future missions to analyze these things more. Callisto does have a magnetic field, which might suggest the presence of a salty interior ocean. For a magnetic field to exist, there has to be something flowing inside the planet, some kind of current, which a salty ocean would provide that medium. So there could be three moons on Jupiter that have ocean subsurfaces, and each of these moons could have more water than Earth. So NASA, as I mentioned on the news a few weeks ago, NASA is planning not only to land on Mars, but their plans are more than that. They believe that we could live on the moon and Mars, so is it possible?